is a interesting conspiracy theory just popped up in the chat. Did you guys see this from Frank? Frank says Manny was never injured. I don't believe he even had surgery. All a cover for his decline since the Padres extended him. Franchise doesn't want to admit it was a mistake and should have let him walk. Your thoughts on that, Ben?
Breaking news. We'll try to get comments on that from everybody involved as soon as possible.
Yeah, I would like if A.J. Cassavell would potentially ask maybe Mike Schilt about that cover-up.
It's an intricate...
A detailed web of lies.
Well, I mean, yeah, the rehab process, the setbacks, you know, cleverly employed to really give it that real post-surgery feel.
Fake scar.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Smart.
I mean...
Smart. Like, man, we locked this guy into this contract for the next 10 years. He's not playing that well right now. Let's say he got surgery and he didn't. Listen, there's no bad ideas in brainstorming, Frank. Apparently. Sometimes there are. I'd like to amend that. Ben actually has some bad ideas in brainstorming sometimes. But I can't, you're not supposed to say
it. There's no way to know whether the elbow surgery recovery combined with the hip flexor strain is having anything to do with Manny's struggles.
Yeah,
it's possible that both of those things are completely unrelated to his struggles at the plate this season.
Do you guys read letters to AJ? I've told you about it before.
You have told us about it, yes.
You got to go subscribe on Substack. How proud are you of me, Paulie, that I actually figured out how to subscribe on Substack?
I'm floored.
It's amazing that I didn't have to call you.
You didn't send text.
No, I did it by
one phone call.
Did it all myself.
Is it www.substack.com?
No,
is that how it works?
No, I don't know how that works. It is substack.com and search for letters to AJ. Whoever this person is, I think Craig's had him on before, and I know that our pals at Quintelligence have had him on. Maybe the kept faith as well. He's really smart. And I would like to take credit for all of his ideas because they're brilliant ideas. He should actually replace me and I'll go do whatever he does for a living because he's really, really good. But he's talking about a couple of things in regards to Manny Machado. Listen to this. The thing is, it's not clear that the team thinks it has a systemic problem here. They seem as bewildered as fans. Manny Machado has won for his last 15, continues to primarily hit high in the order, despite very clearly not being 100% physically. That's a choice. That's something that can be controlled. This brings to mind several questions that can't be answered from outside the organization, like us, like the chat, but could only be answered within the organization. Number one, does the team still see the current version of Manny as one of the best hitters on the roster? Number two, if the Padres do feel Machado is one of the best current hitters on the roster, is that based on historical information? Or is he putting on incredible game speed batting practice displays? Or do the Padres see something in the film or the StatCast data that the rest of us are missing? Number three, do the Padres think that Eggy Rosario would be performing worse than a hurt Manny Machado? It's entirely possible that the team, which does have more information about Machado than anybody else does, may feel that Machado is playing a lot better than the numbers that he's putting up. So,
isn't it true, though, and I haven't checked the data recently, obviously this latest slump's going to make it even look worse, but isn't it true that Manny's main problem is not lower exit velocity or barrels, it's launch angle, that he's hitting the ball
on the ground
too much, and his line drives aren't going high enough, so the power is way down, and he's also not getting a lot of batting average in play. But that's something that I could assume the Padres would look at and go, Manny is just a tick away from being back to Manny if he could just get it back.
And like he says, and like we're in here speculating about, but this is what's really good. The reason this matters, there's evidence that shows that hitting fourth is a crucial spot in the game, sequencing across the season. It's a spot that's too important to give a player on reputation alone. There needs to be some real-time info suggesting that hitting Machado fourth is the appropriate allocation. The team should only continue to award the spot to Manny if they have conviction that his performance results have been worse than the underlying process. There's reason to think this is not the team's assessment. In the final game against the Mets, Machado was dropped to fifth. Earlier this season, we saw similar persistent performance degradation from Xander Bogaerts. In that case, it finally culminated with a drop in the order to hitting sixth. That was sad to see, but it was meritocratic.
But also remember, as Xander,
a smart dude,
as Xander was dropping, you had Jurickson and Profar, you know, starting to hit out of his mind.
Sure.
And they finally realized, okay, I guess Jurickson's just good this year, and they moved him up. Who are you moving up? Who is doing so well?
But not in the cleanup spot, I wouldn't imagine.
I can't imagine that they're ready to put Jackson Merrill in the cleanup spot, even though he has shown plenty of power over this last week.
Well, and it was when Solano hit those two home runs, it's okay, no problem. If Manny needs to go down or he needs to be on the IL, Solano was 0 for 8 in this series, didn't do anything. It just, you know,
Now you're talking about, you know, Eggy Rosario's slugging a lot at AAA, but
right.
We've seen Eggy here. Do we trust that he can come up? And if we really did want to give Manny a break, that Eggy would immediately come in and be performing for the Padres? They just don't have a lot of options when it comes to who they're going to hit, you know, fourth, fifth in the lineup.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to it. Again, though, you do feel it's given to Manny based on his track record, right? Like, which again, I don't think it's that uncommon to be like, this is our, he's got 300 home runs in the big leagues. This is our four hole hitter. He's going to work it out. But it certainly doesn't look like he's, you know, anywhere up to the task right now. So I don't know what you do. I think you certainly, I think you can certainly maneuver the lineup around. That's always, you know, that's always the easy suggestion is, oh, well, it's not working. Start tinkering with the lineup a little bit. Fine. I mean, I have no problem with it. I've never been a guy that comes in here and says, and you will have those guys that say, don't stop messing with the lineup. Nobody can get in a groove. No. I say jigger it every chance you get if it's not working.
I did see the play on Saturday that had some people up in arms about Manny and not hustling it out to first base. If you want to discuss that, let me throw out the phone numbers first for Take on Woods. We need a contestant here in about 2 minutes. Chance to qualify for the getaway to Las Vegas, the dining credit, the concert tickets, the whole shooting match. 833-288-0973. Challenge Woods to our musical trivia contest here. 833-288-0973. So yeah, Saturday, Manny hits a sharp, I think like two hopper to Vientos at third base. And, you know, as Manny tends to do, knowing that it's right at a guy, and also, you know, he's got his hip flexor and he's not running well to begin with, he is not sprinting out of the box. Vientos drops it, you know, it kind of rolls away from him for a second, but because Manny wasn't going hard, it still gets him by about a step and a half at first base. It was, you know, not the best look for Manny Machado to have a play that a lot of guys would have ended up beating out.
Haven't we seen that a million times, though? Like, you just said it. As he tends to do when a ball is hit right at a guy, it didn't look any different to
me. I didn't think it was.
And then when you factor in the injury, like, look, Manny doesn't hit a lot of triples, but triples right now are doubles. A lot of doubles could be singles for him. He can't run.
Yeah, I mean, and so, but I think the argument to that is then he shouldn't be playing. And,
right, and,
you
that's,
know,
and that's a fair argument.
It's
well,
a fair,
I mean, even if he was 100% healthy, there's a good chance that Manny still does the exact same thing. Because Manny's equation, and you may disagree with it, is that if I hit that ball 100 times and I sprint out of the box 100 times, there may be once that the guy bobbles it, or there's a throw that I end up getting on base one more time out of 100. But the toll that I take on my body by doing that for no reason 99 times is just not worth it. That my production will actually go down, my value to the team will go down if I put that much strain on my body. I will not be able to post, I will not be able to be out there the way that I am. You can totally disagree with that, but covering Manny and knowing Manny as well as we have, I'm pretty sure that's his mental equation, that I am more valuable to the team in holding a little bit back on 99 out of those 100 when it may cost me an on-base once in a while, but I will be out there and doing more damage for my team in the long run. You can be as mad about that as you want. You can disagree with it 100%. That's the calculus that goes on in Manny's brain, and I'm pretty sure that the Padres are also okay with that calculus that Manny has in his head when it comes to those plays.
People got a real, they don't like the bubbles.
See, that would bother me if I had never seen it before.
He bubbles on everything. He bubbles on
diving plays.
Like, that's the thing. People lose
Manny
their
also
minds.
Is a very intelligent, savvy player, and he will hustle off. When he hits one like between second and third, knows it's going to be a tough play, he's out there running fast, knowing he can steal as fast as he can, knowing he can try to steal a base hit. I mean, like any ball player, he wants as many hits as possible to get on possible. But
everything is, like I was talking about with the send and the non-send of Leaper, right? Like, everything when it's going poorly is the wrong decision. Everything. That decision by Manny, if Manny did that calculus in his head, that was the wrong decision, because you're not performing. It's not going to be overlooked. And it you have to eyewash it. You have to, in that case. You have to eyewash that play. Even if, like, I think that the typical fan says to themselves, well, I'd rather him get hurt busting it down the line, which doesn't make sense. But when you see it, you want that eyewash,
which is
too.
Fine. If you're a fan, you can think that way. Manuel says, stop making excuses.
Machado. Nobody is.
I'm simply explaining, as I see it, the calculus that goes on in his mind, sure, and why it's okay with him, and it's okay with the San Diego Padres with how he does it.
Yep.
Now, maybe that's totally wrong. Maybe other players should be more like Manny and, you know, shouldn't be sprinting quite as much. I don't know which one's better or not, but he's decided that he is more productive and a better baseball player the way he does it. Now, ultimately, you want the best baseball player you can get for 162 games. And this is how Manny thinks that he does that for his team. He may be wrong, and the fans may be right. But I tend to think that a guy with as much baseball experience and who knows himself as well as Manny,
again,
probably has more information on this than we do.
Nobody cares if he's 6-for-12 in the series, if he's blowing a bubble, if he's taking that. You know, if you're performing, no one cares what you do. I saw Bryce Harper dog it on a ground ball the other day. Six hopper to the second baseman, barely came in the frame. But they don't care. Why don't they care? You know why they don't care? Because the Phillies are rolling. You know, the Phillies are beating the crap out of everybody, and he's having a good year. But so then you can hit a six hopper to the second baseman and dog it. You can. I saw Profar do it. Profar's carried this team. Nobody's going to say anything to Profar. It happens. It happens all the time. And so, yeah, I'm not making excuses for him at all. I thought it was a bad look. Certainly, I don't care that he blows bubbles. He always blows bubbles. His friggin' bobblehead is him blowing a bubble. Stop with the bubbles. You want to complain about something? Complain about the production. You have every right to complain about his production. It's been terrible. Enough with the bubble bit, for Christ's sakes. Like, who cares? He does it when he gets a bomb. He does it when he strikes out. He does it when he makes a diving play. He does it when one rolls through his legs, which is rare.
I would.
It's
like
never going to stop.
Does anybody have gum? I'd like to see you blow some bubbles while playing Take on Woods.
I have
up
some
here
in the car. I have big league chew.
I got some.
Yeah, yeah. Paul's got some. Let's see if you can blow bubbles.
It's so stupid.
And still win today's game of Take on Woods.
Like, get pissed.
Ready? Here we go. All right.
Get pissed. That's fine. Get pissed.
Soften it up while our contestant goes, and we will play.
I couldn't be any softer right now.
Right now. Let's go.
Talking about this team. Here.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on Woods.
All right, better have your thinking cap on, Woods. We got Guy on the line. He's a good player. Guy, welcome to Take on Woods. How are you?
Good morning, Guy.
Good morning.
What's up, Guy?
Suffering along with you.
Yeah, I know. All right, Take on Woods brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Good prize this month. Not only a two-night stay at the Fontainebleau Las Vegas, one of the newest resorts on the Strip, also your choice of tickets to Hootie and the Blowfish or Smashing Pumpkins at the Blue Live Theater, and a $150 poolside dining credit. Summer room packages and tickets available now at FontainebleauLasVegas.com. So your choices of category are It's Not False, which is, you'll figure out, but it's pretty simple. She's a Lady. Those are five song titles that start with She's. And Not for Nothing. Nothing, the key word in those answers. So It's Not False, She's a Lady, or Not for Nothing, Guy?
That's right. She's a Lady.
She's a Lady. All right. Today I've got five titles that start with She's, but not the Tom Jones classic that provides the name for our category. So I'll give you that as well. 60 seconds to answer as many of the five. You go first, Woods goes second, you beat her tie-in, we put you into the drawing for the grand prize. First question's the two-second song. Polly's going to play our music, and you need to give me the title and the artist. Guy, you ready to play?
Sure.
Polly, you queued up for our two-second song? Okay. 60 seconds on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music in the category She's a Lady. Good luck, Guy. Let's take on Woods.
I'm so popular. I'm so popular.
So Cold by the Stones.
Correct. First released in 1973, which early hit for Daryl Hall and John Oates dealt with the subject of divorce and loss.
She's a Man-Eater.
No, incorrect. Canada's Tal Bachman is best known for which 1999 hit that references Cleopatra, Joan of Arc, and Aphrodite.
Wait, say it again, please, Ben.
Canada's Tal Bachman is best known for which 1999 hit that references Cleopatra, Joan of Arc, and Aphrodite.
Pass.
Which song from The Stranger did Billy Joel write for his then ex-wife Elizabeth Weber?
He's always a woman to
Correct.
Me.
Keyboard player Rod Argent wrote which 1964 debut hit for The Zombies that made it all the way to the Grammy Hall of Fame?
Pass.
Canada's Tal Bachman is best known for which 1999 hit that references Cleopatra, Joan of Arc, and Aphrodite? We only got two there, unfortunately. You got She's So Cold by the Stones and She's Always a Woman for Billy Joel. She's Gone is the Hall & Oates early hit. She's So High by Tal Bachman and She's Not There is the song by the Zombies. Real banger on that one. All right, let's bring Woods in. See how he does. All right, here comes Woods. Guy's score is locked in. Woods chewing his gum to see if he can blow bubbles and still win this game of Take on Woods.
The best to blow bubbles with.
That's fine. 60 seconds back on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Guy.
It's Rolling Stones. I'll come back to it. Pass.
First released in 1973, which early hit for Daryl Hall and John Oates dealt with the subject of divorce and loss. Canada's Tal Bachman is best known for which 1990...
She's So High.
Correct. Which song from The Stranger did Billy Joel write for his then ex-wife, Elizabeth Weber?
She's Got Away.
Incorrect.
What?
Keyboard player Rod Argent wrote which 1964 debut hit for The Zombies that made it all the way to the Grammy Hall of Fame?
The Time of the Season?
Go back to our two-second song.
No.
That's incorrect.
God! Stones. Category would help me, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think so.
I'm dead.
I haven't seen many bubbles yet.
Too busy filling my diaper. Again.
Wow.
Shut out, Paulie Friday, by the way. Shut out.
And it loses 2-1. Congratulations, Guy.
Ah!
How did you not get the Stones one? That was maybe the most stunning miss I've ever seen from you.
I'm so hot for her, and she's so cold.
By the Stones.
Settle down, Mick Jagger.
I thought you're a Stones guy, though.
I am. I don't like that song.
I never did. She's Gone by Daryl Hall and John Oates. She's So High, which is you got that one.
She's always a woman. I get the Tal Bachman song.
That's the one you got. Yeah. She's Always a Woman by Billy Joel, and She's Not There is the Zombies Grammy Hall of Famer. Wow. Guys, stay on the line.
I gotta get back in the lab.
Did
man.
Not even.
One for my last 10.
Woods down to AAA, maybe.
Bat me ninth.
DFAM. I don't know.
All right. Maybe Manny should stop chewing gum and blowing bubbles.
Jesus.
If that's the kind of performance dip that we can expect, that is a problem right there.
Man, this is terrible.
All right, we've got Don't Do This coming up next. I think...
Rory McIlroy.
Ooh, you want to get to U.S. Open talk?
More than
Don't
any
Do
of
This? All right, we can do that. That's fine. Also, great piece over the weekend for Father's Day on our own Mud Grant. Oh, there's your bubble. Congratulations, you still lose. Okay. Let's check traffic on 97.3 The Fam.
Don't Do This.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Ugh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does fall from the tree.
Don't Do This.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Don't Do This is brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sereno Valley. Kraft Taco is some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thecrafttaco.com. Take a look at their happy hour specials today. Thecrafttaco.com. Let me first congratulate Stephen Woods correctly predicting Bryson DeChambeau would win the U.S. Open and putting his money where his mouth is as well. In your, you've got a season-long one-and-done pool that you're in. You're like second out of how many people right now?
Like 100.
Oh, wow.
It's so nerve-wracking. But it was my it was with my other guy. I put $50 on Bryson on Thursday to win the whole thing at plus 2,000 odds. So your boy cleaned up a G yesterday.
That's 20 to 1.
Yep. Cleaned up a G yesterday. You want to talk about a nerve-wracking afternoon on Father's Day. Holy cow.
Well, even Bryson admitted, and this is the don't do this. Even Bryson admitted, after Rory took a two-shot lead, he had the, I'm in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Feeling.
We
he
all
knew
did.
It.
Everybody.
He knew it. Rory was on. He was sinking putts. He was looking great. He sunk, I mean, over 100 feet worth of birdie putts, making birdies on, what, four or five holes from 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, making that run right through, taking the lead. And it was his tournament to win.
He had four holes, man. He had four holes. He had 15, 16, 17, 18.
And as it turned out, had he just parred those holes. Had he just bogeyed only one of them, he would have won the U.S. Open, ending a decade-long major title drought, answering a lot of questions, putting a lot of the negativity of the last few years and the inability to get it done in the rearview mirror. He was ready to turn the page and write a new script. And then he got to the 15th, which, you know what, that's Pinehurst. He had a pretty good shot, and it just bounced and rolled through the green. Hit it a little too well. I'm never gonna criticize a golfer who just hit one a little too well and it carried a little too far, put him in a bad spot, ended up with a bogey. Fine. All he had to do was par the last three holes. On 16, he puts it on the green, gets it within, 3 feet?
2.5.
2 feet, 11 inches.
Yeah.
And if you're not a golfer and you look at a 2 foot, 11 inch putt, you can definitely miss those. When you're a pro, though.
He had made 496 of 496 from that distance.
It was
496 from 496.
It was the shortest putt he has missed all year long.
Yeah. In the biggest moment.
And yes, the greens are fast and the pressure is there. But that's a choke. When you don't make that putt, there's something in your brain, there's some nerves. Obviously, the takeover. I think he hit it a little hard. Just had the old, let's see if I can just jam this in the back.
Whoa.
And
oh, all right. That didn't make it much better. Much better. Wasn't.
And hit the X-rated. Side of the cup.
Sorry.
Lipped it out. There goes the lead. But he still could get into a playoff. Gets up and down for par on 17. Comes to 18. Puts it in the native area. Has to punch it right in front of the green. Hits a really good chip to about 3.5 feet. But it was above the hole, and this time he did the opposite, like we all do. You make one mistake, hit one too hard, what do you do on the next one?
Hit
it too soft, it took too much of the break, hit the bottom lip, and missed another short putt that put him one stroke behind Bryson. And yet still, he wasn't done.
No.
He had to make that agonizing wait then. Sign your scorecard, sit there and watch Bryson need to par the last hole to win the U.S. Open and take it from you. What does Bryson do? He absolutely yanks his drive to the left under a tree.
Behind a root.
Can barely get a club on it. Punches it into the toughest bunker at Pinehurst. The one that no one has gotten up and down out of all week long. And if you play golf, you know. There's a lot of hard shots in golf. But the hardest shot, even pros will acknowledge, is the 50 to 70 yard bunker shot.
Oh, yeah.
It's too long to just do the old blast it out and run it onto the green, but it's too short to do the full just pick it clean shot. You gotta hit
finesse it
absolutely perfectly. And any error, you chunk it a little bit too much behind, you end up 20 yards short.
Or you hit the top of the lip.
Or you catch too much ball, you skull it 15, 20 yards over the green.
And you ain't making par.
Into the clubhouse, which is right behind the green. When I played it last year, I was terrified I was going to hit it into the clubhouse and break a window. And Bryson said, it's not a thought you don't want to have as you're walking in there, but he absolutely
4 feet
nailed it to
and
4 feet.
Makes the putt, and your boy was running around the house screaming. A Father's Day miracle indeed. But the don't do this, man, is right after it happens, you get in your car and you drive away. And you do not address the media at all. Now, I understand that Rory was the mouthpiece for the PGA throughout the LIV deal. I know that Bryson's a part of LIV. But, man, When Bryson lost by a stroke to Xander Schauffele at the
PGA Championship last month,
who was the first guy there to dap him up and say, great job? Bryson DeChambeau was. After losing by a stroke, Rory gets in his car, spins the tires, peels out of the parking lot, doesn't stand there and wear it like Norman did, like Vandeveld did, like all the guys that have choked the U.S. Open away. Rory McIlroy cannot be bothered to go face the media. And I get it, man. I'd be really pissed too. But knowing the history of that tournament, knowing how many guys have done that and sat there and wore it, and not even to congratulate your opponent, is ridiculous.
I think more than a bad look for Rory, it's a missed opportunity.
100%.
Because Rory can be a stand-up guy. He could have owned it. You know, there's nothing else to say other than I blew it. What was Phil? When Phil blew it on the 18th hole at Wingfoot at the U.S. Open, what was his quote? I am such a stupid.
Yeah, I'm such a stupid.
I'm such a stupid. And Rory could have had a decent moment like that to own it there. Instead, he peeled out. Perloff, who has the show before us as I'm driving it, has a great line. Well, at least he didn't run over a cop on his way out and get arrested.
He was driving a little recklessly, spinning those tires out of the...
That was pretty good.
And I like Rory well enough, but
I used to not like Bryson DeChambeau. I like him a lot better now.
I said it 3 weeks ago. Is he likable now? He was great.
He's definitely made some changes.
He's been
great. And you know what? I miss now. I'm mad.
I'm mad too
that he's not on the PGA Tour because I still don't want to watch Liv. It doesn't do anything for me. Competing against who? You know, most of those Liv guys didn't do anything in this tournament either.
He's the only one.
He has not taken his foot off the gas. Brooks was for a while, and now Brooks has kind of gone back and is struggling again a bit. And now Bryson's the guy. But why do I want to watch Bryson play against a bunch of either has-beens or never-will-bes?
Or guys that have stopped caring.
I want to see him playing against Rory again.
Yeah,
I want to see him this week at the Elevated event. I want to see more Bryson. And Liv has taken that away from us.
Yep.
And it's frustrating, actually.
Yep.
Because I still don't want to watch Liv. It's not a good product.
It's not a good golf product, man.
But Bryson is a good golf product, and I would like to see more of Bryson.
Rory's got to talk to the media, man. He just has to. So many guys have done it. And he's going to regret that one, I think. I mean, sitting on a pile of $1 billion, he's going to regret it. But you know what I'm saying.
All right, let's get right to a doo-doo this, because we're a little low on time.
Mega doo-doo.
What a great story that came out yesterday, written by Sean O'Neill. Who's filled in. He's covered the Padres in the past for the North County Times. He's now kind of the backup to AJ Cassavell at MLB.com covering the Padres. Writing about Mark Grant and his relationship with his autistic son, Aiden, who's in his 20s. And he's going to be, you know, living at home with his parents. But the time every morning that he takes and the drive to their, you know, the day center where Aiden spends a lot of his time during the day. And what a joy, but also a challenge it is to be a parent of a special needs child. And remember, special needs children become special needs adults. And that's a lifelong commitment, and Mudd embraces it with such a good attitude, as you can expect. Paul, you got a couple of clips.
Yeah, there was one part that it made me laugh, and it's Mark Grant to a T, talking about the 20-minute drive that him and Aiden make every day from Alpine to El Cajon, where he has his day center. And it says, though Aiden doesn't communicate in sentences nor enunciate words fully, the Grant family understands him, so the commute has its own routine. He'll ask me questions, Grant said, and I've got to repeat the right answers. We pass landmarks, and he'll call them out. Go past McDonald's, and he goes, Donald's! This is when Grant, the baseball prankster, kicks in. I say, McDonald's stinks, Grant said. And he'll start laughing, so I get a kick out of that.
Levity is what they talk about the most. And you hear it on the broadcasts when you watch the San Diego Padres, the levity that Mudd provides. And he's very well equipped to do it. You know, I'm sure Mudd sometimes watches a baseball game and he's like, it's just baseball, right? Like the things that I've got going on at home. It is a really good perspective for all of us. And Mudd is truly a gem. One, they broke the mold when they made Mudd Grant, certainly.
It's good to know that the TV persona is the real Mudd too. Yeah. He's a good guy.
Him breaking his kid's balls and telling him McDonald's stinks. Kid starts laughing.
It's so great.
I love that, man.
And that's
we love you, Mudley.
Don't do this for a Monday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Giant, and I mean giant, missed opportunity for your San Diego Padres over this weekend. We'll continue our discussion, get a little bit into Friday night's game, which was a great performance by Matt Waldron. Didn't turn into a victory, though, when we come back with more Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Don't forget to tune in every Thursday at 10 a.m. for the 97.3 The Fan commercial-free Padres Roundtable featuring Ben and Woods, Annie and Elston, and Gwen and Chris, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. For takeout or delivery, go to roundtablepizza.com. Roundtable, the last honest pizza. And it was last Thursday's Roundtable as things were being discussed in a fairly positive manner after a sweep of the A's. Do you remember what I said right at the very end? I said, we'll be back next Thursday.
Yes.
And everything will be completely different.
Correct.
Again. Because that's how this team has gone all season long.
Yeah.
And that's the one right thing that maybe I've said all year about the San Diego Padres. That, yeah, I know, you know, like the weather in other parts of the country, wait a few minutes and it's going to change. So if you want to take some solace, and as ugly as this last three games have been against the New York Mets, wait a couple of minutes and it'll probably change again for the San Diego Padres. Because the only thing consistent about the Padres in 2024... been their lack of consistency.
Correct. And not just 2024. Back to last season as well. It's been, again, this is where we differ. They've been remarkably consistent. In fact, so effing consistent that it drives you.
The most consistent team in baseball,
period. 173 and 173 over the last 346 is the definition of consistent. Definition.
Is it or isn't
it? Though? It is.
Isn't it a team that consistently either wins or loses more consistent than...
That's consistent. That's consistent. Still consistent.
I don't know, but being 500 is the opposite of consistent.
If I miss every three-foot putt...
Then you're consistent.
I'm very consistent.
But the Padres don't do that. They make half their three-foot putts. They miss half their three-foot putts. They're not consistent.
They are consistent in that their record is 500.
They're mediocre, but inconsistent.
Okay, that's fine. We're splitting hairs here.
To say that
at the end of the day,
there are teams that are more consistently bad, and there are teams that are more consistently good. And the Padres are neither of those teams.
Yeah, you're right.
You'd be wrong.
They're mid.
They're consistently bad. They're not.
They're just mid.
No, they play well too often enough to be consistently bad. But
yeah,
they're not
right.
good because they don't play well enough consistently to be good. But they did miss a huge opportunity. We will talk about that and Friday's game right after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Friday's game was at least one of the more typical of your San Diego Padres losses. Good pitching performance from Matt Waldron. Had some opportunities to score runs, but managed only the one on the Jackson Merrill solo home run off Sean Manaea. Went 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position and ended up losing 2-1 to the New York Mets. At the time, I was frustrated, but I didn't feel like it was a sign of impending doom or that this team was all of a sudden hitting the skids. It was simply... oh, that's unfortunate. They wasted a really good pitching performance against a guy they should have beaten. Didn't come through, didn't hit well, but, you know, that lefty struggles thing pops up again. And J.D. Martinez, you know, he had that walk-off home run the day before the Padres series started. He continued and tormented the Padres throughout the series, especially on Friday and Saturday, driving in nearly every run in their first two wins of the series. So you knew he was dangerous. You let him beat you. Just three hits allowed by Matt Waldron. Of course, two of them came in that same inning when they scored their two runs. They just timed things better than the Padres did in that game on Friday. But I wasn't particularly concerned.
I was concerned. The reason I was concerned is knowing who you've got on the bump the next day.
True.
That's the one
we didn't really talk about that much. Major, while ended up only giving up two runs, you can't
not
walk
good.
Six batters
no,
and be a big leaguer.
You can't.
And he needs to go back to the minor league.
He's averaging... how many walks per outing?
Four or five.
Yeah, I mean, it just can't.
And it's not like, well, at least he went eight innings when he walked those guys. No, he's going 3 to 5 innings, and he's walking 4 to 6 batters. He has to go back to the minor leagues.
There's no question.
I'm not saying that he's not still a top prospect. He has some. He threw a 97-mile-an-hour fastball past Pete Alonso, and I go, there's something in there, but it's not ready to be a big leaguer yet.
It's not the command just is not
he
there.
He looks nervous. He just doesn't look like he's comfortable yet in the big leagues, and that's not an indictment on Adam Major. It's not uncommon at all. Exactly, but he's got to go back to the minor leagues.
Yeah, that's the tough one for me is when you continue to spoil some brilliant pitching. The Michael King start, you know, I know they bailed him out later with a walk-off, but Mike, you know, you got your pitchers going out there, and you talked earlier about marrying the two together, you know, the hitting and the, again, Sean Manaea was 0-2 with a 10.36 in June. He was on the skids, man. He was on the skids. And you managed to scratch out, eke out, 5 hits, 2 singles from Arise, 2 singles from Profar, and a home run from Jackson Merrill to score 1 run against the lowly New York Mets and let 7 innings of 3-hit baseball go by the wayside from Matt Waldron, who, by the way, is the ace of this staff right now. The ace. He's your number one pitcher.
No lies detected.
Not one lie detected. He is your number one starter.
Which is staggering.
Staggering and an indictment.
And I don't mean that as a
slight. No disrespect to Matt Waldron whatsoever.
If we went back 3 months ago, getting ready for spring training, and they said, yeah, Matt Waldron, he's going to be your ace in June.
We're dead. We're dead. You would say, we're dead. And again, it's not an indictment of him. He's doing his job.
He's doing more than his job.
Well, way more than his job.
He's a fifth starter.
He's the biggest bargain on this team right now, other than maybe Jerks and Profar. Yeah. But Jerks and Profar is only here for a year. Matt Waldron's here for many more years. So I don't know what the hell it is, to be honest with you. I'm banging my head against the wall. But you got to figure out left-handed pitching. You get 2 more in this series, by the way, against the Phillies. You got 2 more coming at you. So it doesn't get any easier for you. And just spoiling good pitching performance after good pitching performance. Again, knowing who's on the bump the next day, knowing it could be a little bit rocky, that's the one you got to come out and win. You have to. And you didn't. You lost 2-1.
So here's the real missed opportunity, and the show that I would have loved to have been doing this morning instead. Had the Padres won the series or swept the series from the Mets, they'd be, you know, 3 or 5 games above 500, and they'd be about 5 games behind the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Which is insane.
Who would then also be without Mookie Betts now,
and
who broke his wrist yesterday. Yep. Yamamoto going on the injured list with a rotator cuff injury.
Blood in the water.
And guess what? The national media would be going, the Dodgers are now vulnerable. Here come the Padres. Look at what we have here. Maybe even a race in the National League West. That would be the narrative this morning had the Padres simply taken care of business against a team that even a Mets fan in Italian Paul last week said they will have no problem taking care of this Mets team. No problem. And instead they get swept. And
he reversed psychology to all of us.
It would be laughable to discuss the Padres making a run at the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers truly are in a world of hurt right now with their injuries and the lack of performance they've gotten from the bottom part of their order. They've been nowhere near the team they thought they were going to be. No one in the National League West is threatening them. Padres are still ahead of the Giants and Diamondbacks.
Right.
What does that say about the Giants and the Diamondbacks?
What does that say about the NL West? It's garbage. And no one is running away with it right now. I mean, what's their cushion? 8 games?
8 games.
8-game cushion. So, yeah, man, you have really, really shot yourself in the foot over and over and over. You wonder if you have any toes left at this point. And again, like I said, it doesn't get any easier. You go face the Phillies, you got 2 nasty lefties, and the righty you're facing, is it Nola?
That's a good question. I know you got
Suarez
and
Tiller.
Yeah. Sanchez, Nola, Suarez.
Nola got lit up his last time out, but he always owns the Padres.
Yeah. We'll be talking
about other than his brother who had that game-winning hit against him that one time. But otherwise, he owns the Padres. Suarez owned the Padres last time they faced him, and he's been fantastic this season.
Is it? Could I just skip these games?
But
you guys got it?
But it's just the Padres. Are we going to be that stunned if they all of a sudden look good again?
Yes, it's left-handed pitchers. Mm-hmm. That's the one that will not go away right now. And until they figure it out, I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do. It's clearly in their heads. Clearly. Oh, lefty on the bump, we're toast. I just don't know how you fix it.
This really could have been a nightmare season for the LA Dodgers.
It really could have been.
And it's not just the Padres. I mean, if the Diamondbacks had, you know,
continued
from their World Series and the players they added and gotten off to a fast start, or if the Giants with their investments in the offseason, if Snell was pitching like an ace and Jung Ho Lee came and stayed healthy and was doing good things for them, the Giants could be making a run, and the Dodgers could find themselves easily in, you know, third, fourth place, and you know, going like, what is happening to us? And the rest of the NL West is completely left a really underachieving Dodgers team off the hook
100%
this year.
With an 8-game cushion.
Overpaid and underachieving, yeah. And now injury-riddled Dodgers team that's going to require Shohei Ohtani to do a lot of heavy lifting coming up. And Ohtani did hit 2 home runs yesterday. He had been slumping in June. Maybe he's coming out of it just at the right time. They always seem to have better timing than everybody else.
Yes.
Just when they need him, he's starting to jump and, you know, hits a couple of home runs again. So, missed opportunity for your San Diego Padres over the weekend. I want to know why I was greeted by a film crew as I arrived to work this morning. We'll talk about that as we reset. Ben and Woods coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan. Don't forget to tune in every Thursday at 10 a.m. for the 97.3 The Fan commercial-free Padres Roundtable featuring Ben and Woods, Annie Elston, and Gwen and Chris, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. For takeout or delivery, go to roundtablepizza.com. Roundtable, the last honest pizza. And it was last Thursday's Roundtable as things were being discussed in a fairly positive manner after a sweep of the A's. Do you remember what I said right at the very end? I said, we'll be back next Thursday.
Yes.
And everything will be completely different.
Correct.
Again. Because that's how this team has gone all season long.
Yeah.
And that's the one right thing that maybe I've said all year about the San Diego Padres. That,
yeah.
I know, you know, like the weather in other parts of the country, wait a few minutes and it's going to change. So if you want to take some solace, and as ugly as this last 3 games have been against the New York Mets, wait a couple of minutes and it'll probably change again for the San Diego Padres. Because the only thing consistent about the Padres in 2024... been their lack of consistency.
Correct. And not just 2024. Season as well. It's been, again, this is where we differ. They've been remarkably consistent. In fact, so effing consistent that it drives
you. Consistent team,
the most consistent team in baseball, period. 173 and 173 over the last 346 is the definition of consistent. Definition.
It's. Is it or isn't
it? Though? It is.
Isn't it a team that consistently either wins or loses more consistent than...
That's every
that's
team.
That's consistent.
That's consistent. Still consistent.
I don't know, but being 500 is the opposite of consistent.
If I miss every 3-foot putt...
Then you're consistent.
I'm very consistent.
But the Padres don't do that. They make half their 3-foot
putts. Okay,
they miss half their 3-foot putts.
If I make...
They're not consistent.
They are consistent in that their record is 500.
They're mediocre, but inconsistent.
Okay, that's fine. We're splitting hairs here.
A little bit,
at the end of the day,
there are teams that are more consistently bad, and there are teams that are more consistently good. And the Padres are neither of those teams.
Yeah, you're right.
You'd be wrong.
They're
if
mid.
You said they're consistently bad. They're not.
They're just mid.
No, they play well too often enough to be consistently
correct.
Bad. But
yeah,
they're not
right.
good because they don't play well enough consistently to be good. But they did miss a huge opportunity. We will talk about that. And Friday's game right after a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Friday's game was at least one of the more typical of your San Diego Padres losses. Good pitching performance from Matt Waldron. Had some opportunities to score runs, but managed only the one on the Jackson Merrill solo home run off Sean Manaea. Went 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position and ended up losing 2-1 to the New York Mets. At the time, I was frustrated, but I didn't feel like it was a sign of impending doom or that this team was all of a sudden hitting the skids. It was simply... Oh, that's unfortunate. They wasted a really good pitching performance against a guy they should have beaten. Didn't come through, didn't hit well, but, you know, that lefty struggles thing pops up again. And J.D. Martinez, you know, he had that walk-off home run the day before the Padres series started. He continued and tormented the Padres throughout the series, especially
ridiculous.
On Friday and Saturday, driving in nearly every run in their first 2 wins of the series. So you knew he was dangerous. You let him beat you. Just 3 hits allowed by Matt Waldron. Of course, 2 of them came in that same inning when they scored their 2 runs. They just timed things better than the Padres did in that game on Friday. But I wasn't particularly concerned.
I was concerned. The reason I was concerned is knowing who you've got on the bump the next day.
True.
That's the one
we didn't really talk about that much. Major, ended up only giving up 2 runs. You can't
not
walk
good.
6 batters
no,
and be a big leaguer.
You can't.
And he needs to go back to the minor leagues.
He's averaging... How many walks per outing?
4 or 5.
Yeah, I mean, it just can't.
And he's not. It's not like. Well, at least he went 8 innings when
right.
he walked those guys. No, he's He's going 3 to 5 innings, and he's walking 4 to 6 batters. He has to go back to the minor leagues.
There's no question.
I'm not saying that he's not still a top prospect. He has some. He threw a 97-mile-an-hour fastball past Pete Alonso, and I go, there's something in there,
yeah.
But it's not ready to be a big leaguer yet.
It's not the command just is not
he
there.
He looks nervous. He just doesn't look like he's comfortable yet in the big leagues, and that's not an
not
indictment
uncommon.
On
and
Adam
not
Major.
Uncommon. At all.
Exactly. But he's got to go back to the minor leagues.
Yeah, that's the tough one for me is when you continue to spoil some brilliant pitching. The Michael King start, you know, I know they bailed him out later with a walk-off, but Mike, you know, you got your pitchers going out there, and you talked earlier about marrying the two together, you know, the hitting and the again, Sean Manaea was 0-2 with a 10.36 in June. He was on the skids, man. He was on the skids, and you managed to eke out 5 hits, 2 singles from Arise, 2 singles from Profar, and a home run from Jackson Merrill to score 1 run against the lowly New York Mets and let 7 innings of 3-hit baseball go by the wayside from Matt Waldron, who, by the way, is the ace of this staff right now. The ace. He's your number one pitcher.
No lies detected.
Not one lie detected. He is your number one starter.
Which is staggering.
Staggering and an indictment.
And I don't mean that as a
slight. No disrespect to Matt Waldron whatsoever.
If we went back 3 months ago, getting ready for spring training, and they said, yeah,
that's
Matt Waldron, he's going to be your ace June.
We're dead. We're dead. You would say, we're dead. And again, it's not an indictment of him. He's doing his job.
He's doing more than his job.
Well, way more than his job.
He's a fifth starter.
He's the biggest bargain on this team right now, other than maybe Jerks and Profar. But Jerks and Profar is only here for a year. Matt Waldron's here for many more years. So it's just a lack of, to be honest with you. I'm banging my head against the wall. But you got to figure out left-handed pitching. You get 2 more in this series, by the way, against the Phillies. You got 2 more coming at you, so it doesn't get any easier for you. And just spoiling good pitching performance after good pitching performance again, knowing who's on the bump the next day, knowing it could be a little bit rocky. That's the one you got to come out and win. You have to, and you didn't. You lost 2-1.
So here's the real missed opportunity. In the show that I would have loved to have been doing this morning instead, had the Padres won the series or swept the series from the Mets, they'd be, you know, 3 or 5 games above 500, and they'd be about 5 games behind the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Which is insane.
Who would then also be without Mookie Betts now,
and
who broke his wrist yesterday. Yep. Yamamoto going on the injured list with a rotator cuff injury.
Blood in the water.
And guess what? The national media would be going, the Dodgers are now vulnerable. Here come the Padres. Look at what we have here. Maybe even a race in the National League West. That would be the narrative this morning had the Padres simply taken care of business against a team that even a Mets fan in Italian Paul last week said they will have no problem taking care of this Mets team. No problem. And instead they get swept. And
he reversed psychology at all of
us. It would be laughable to discuss the Padres making a run at the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers truly are in a world of hurt right now with their injuries and the lack of performance they've gotten from the bottom part of their order. They've been nowhere near the team they thought they were going to be. No one in the National League West is threatening them. Padres are still ahead of the Giants and Diamondbacks.
Right.
What does that say about the Giants and the Diamondbacks?
What does that say about the NL West? It's garbage, and no one is running away with it right now. I mean, what's their cushion? 8 games?
8 games.
8-game cushion. So, yeah, man, you have really, really shot yourself in the foot over and over and over. You wonder if you have any toes left at this point. And again, like I said, it doesn't get any easier. You go face the Phillies, you got 2 nasty lefties, and the righty you're facing, is it Nola?
That's a good question. I know you got
is it
Suarez
Nola?
And
Killer.
Yeah.
Sanchez, Nola, Suarez.
Nola got lit up his last time out, but he always owns the Padres.
Yeah. We'll be talking.
Other than his brother who had that game-winning hit against him that one time. But otherwise, he owns the Padres. Suarez owned the Padres last time they faced him, and he's been fantastic this season.
Is it? Could I just skip these games?
But
you guys got it?
But
I don't wanna watch
it's just
these.
The Padres. Are we going to be that stunned if they all of a sudden look good again?
Yes, it's left-handed pitchers. Mm-hmm. That's the one that will not go away right now. And until they figure it out, I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do. It's clearly in their heads. Clearly. Oh, lefty on the bump, we're toast. I just don't know how you fix it.
This really could have been a nightmare season for the L.A. Dodgers.
It really could have been.
And it's not just the Padres. I mean, if the Diamondbacks had, you know,
continued
from their World Series and the players they added and gotten off to a fast start, or if the Giants with their investments in the offseason, if Snell was pitching like an ace and Jung Ho Lee came and stayed healthy and was doing good things for them, the Giants could be making a run and the Dodgers could find themselves easily in, you know, third, fourth place and you know, going like, what is happening to us? And the rest of the NL West is completely left a really underachieving Dodgers team off the hook
100%
this year.
With an 8-game cushion.
Overpaid and underachieving and now injury-riddled Dodgers team that's going to require Shohei Ohtani to do a lot of heavy lifting coming up. And Ohtani did hit 2 home runs yesterday. He had been slumping in June. Maybe he's coming out of it just at the right time. They always seem to have better timing than everybody else.
Yes.
Just when they need him, he's starting to jump and, you know, hits a couple of home runs again. So, missed opportunity for your San Diego Padres over the weekend. I want to know why I was greeted by a film crew as I arrived to work this morning. We'll talk about that as we reset Ben and Woods coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.